Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And how deeply grateful I am you chose to be with us on this February 16th day, 2019. We're going to look at why can't I? We'll look at a few questions that came in. These are wonderful questions, very brave of these listeners, and I'm very grateful that I have the opportunity to serve them. I want to remind you that these radio programs, as you well know, are supported and made available through the contributions of my sponsors. They're the ones that make all this possible. Without their kindness, their love, their devotion, we would not be on the air. And I want to thank them. I do. But we need more sponsors to help. It's really quite a burden. And if you have found these radio programs to be anything of value to you or meaningful in any way, I hope you will become a sponsor and help us sustain our radio program. It's a very, very important thing that we do. It goes out to lots and lots of people, thousands actually, and I hope that you will, give us a chance to serve humankind and sustain our radio program. If you go to the website at aspire.org, you will see why support Aspire. It's a very simple little button down there at the bottom. Just click on it. It'll tell you all about sponsorship, how to become a sponsor, what you get for being, and you get a lot of things. You get the message of the month each and every month, and it's on a different spiritual subject every month, something that is deeply pertinent and important to you. You get access to my podcast, video cast, and commentaries that come out twice a month, and they're very, they're very important, but they're involved. They're for a more serious kind of attitude. And then you get 122 discourses from all of my TV discourses that I've done over the years, from Nobody Likes You Anyway to The Heart of the Tao to, there are so many, Passing Through the Fires. All of these are there for you to help you. And I think you'll find all of them most wonderful. And the new series that we've just put up, What is the Point of It All, is up there as well. So go take a look. Help us out, won't you? We need some help, and this would be a very kind thing for you to do. Okay, here we go to why can't I? First question comes from Lynn. She does not tell me where she lives. I can't seem to discipline my body to do the things I know it should do, like exercise and eat correct. Why do you think, Lynn? Well, Lynn, I just recently learned how to discipline my body more than ever before. Come to find out, I inherited from my father that wonderful thing called diabetes. Now, truthfully speaking, I don't really have it. I don't have to take insulin or any of that. I'm able to control it through diet. And I've learned quite a few things about my genetics, the state of my mind and emotions and all of that through this whole thing. So all I can do really is share with you what I've learned. And, you know, there are more than 1,000 people who would be happy to tell you what to do. I'm going to take a spiritual thing on this, okay? So I'm going to take a kind of a spiritual jaunt on this, and maybe that will help you. What I've learned in my inner work is about the state of my emotions and why they are the way they are. I inherited, like you, Lynn, genetic dispositions that were not very healthy. I didn't know it when I was younger. I had no idea what they were all about. I knew my father had diabetes, but I really didn't understand the state of it. I didn't educate myself on it. I was cavalier about what I wanted to eat and, you know, that kind of thing. But now, after all of this and losing a ton of weight, I have learned how to monitor my eating by understanding the state of my emotionality, because it all has to do with emotions. Now, when I'm frustrated and all of that, I naturally want to put something in my mouth to eat. It's something we do habitually, and it's instinctive to our genetic nature. Now, you say, well, what's spiritual about that? How to understand it? The first thing I had to do was learn to have a healthy respect for the state of the body and its place in my life. I had to find its place in my life. I am a man with a physical carcass. And in order to do these radio programs, to exist here on Earth, to do the things I can do to serve humankind, I truly need to take care of my body. And a part of that is also to have some sanctity for the body, some compassion for it. If I don't have compassion for my body and its state of being, then I'm not taking good care of me as a human being, but I'm also not taking care of my practice. I'm not fully involved in my practice. My practice includes taking care of the body. So when you start to look at it and you're meditating and you find that your mind is, you know, glancing over here and glancing over there, sometimes it has to do with your sugar. Sometimes it has to do with either hypoglycemia, or it can have something to do with diabetes. It can have something to do with, well, enzymes inside your stomach. It has to do with the way your brain works and the chemistry that's involved in that. There are all sorts of things I've discovered that it has to deal with. The body, me, the whole deal. So now I am looking at everything from a different point of view. My practice of meditation, my inner work, is now spreading to my body, and I'm learning to exercise it. I'm learning to properly eat. And when I am frustrated and I feel this thing that I want to maybe stick a piece of cheese in my mouth, or cheese and crackers were always big with me, or something like that, I realize I'm frustrated. Now, I can do some meditation. I can do some inner work, some breath work. I breathe from my root chakra up to my heart, and then I release. Then I breathe again in my root chakra up to my heart and release again. And I do this over and over and over and over again. As I breathe from the root to the heart, I suddenly realize the peace that descends upon me. And I find my mind is released from the emotionality that I am struggling with about any given subject that I might be working on with someone or that I feel frustrated with. My work is a very difficult work. You're dealing with people who have ugly temperaments and get very angry and don't really want to do anything about themselves. They think they know it all, and then they find out they don't, and then they don't believe you, and then they suffer, and then they come back and they say, I wish I hadn't done that. And this goes around and around and around and around, over and over and over again. And it becomes addictive, and it also becomes systemic to other people. So I have learned inside myself to discipline me. And I discipline not only my mind, but I discipline my body. And I do it through no longer giving it whatever it wants, whenever it wants. I don't do that. Now, it is what it is. It may want many things. It may want a, you know, piece of cheese or crackers or whatever it wants. And I simply realize I need to breathe. I am frustrated. I am angry. I am feeling lost, whatever it is that I'm going through at that time with the human being. And I no longer give Greg everything he wants. And that's just how I do it. It's really very simple. To discipline your body, you're going to have to understand your emotions. If you do not understand your emotions, there is no way you're going to be able to discipline your body. I promise you, there is absolutely no way you're going to be able to do it. No matter what you may think, that is going to be a difficult task. Because the emotions and the body are connected. They interlink with each other, and then they affect your brain and tell you what quality of thoughts to think and excuses you can come up with and 100 million other things, none of which are very good for you. So there you are. It's really that simple. No big deal. Lynn, I hope that helps you. Get a dietitian to help you, maybe. Please forgive me. Namaste. It's true. Everything's so emotional with us. And the more emotions we have and the more we kind of get into our emotions and allow them to rule us, the more we want to eat and do things. Some people drink drugs, you know, both legal and illegal, marijuana. It's all there. Yeah, well, there's 100 million ways to go into hell. And we find every single one of them, don't we? Next one comes from Raymond. He does not tell me where he lives. Can any of us really control our minds? I have tried in meditation and I just can't control it. Any suggestions, Raymond? Raymond, you can't control your mind, but you can learn how to focus your attentions. And your mind and your attentions are two different things. My attentions are based on my intent, my motive. And oftentimes, we didn't train our minds to do this very well. Our motives and our intents are about a certain obsession, compulsion, because we don't cathart. We don't let go of our hurt, our pain, our sorrow. When you can let go of your hurt, your pain, your sorrow, when you can actually see it for what it is, the way your emotions are working, that's when you can start to change many aspects of your life if you so desire. You really can. It's not very hard. But to do all of this, to get all of this, to understand any of this, you have to begin to understand the focus of your attentions. And usually, our focus is on our emotions. It is your and my emotions that determine the quality of our thoughts, the continuity of our thoughts, and the volume of our thoughts. Now, science will tell you, or psychologists will tell you, it's the opposite way around, but I've never found that to be true. If you really want to focus your attention and have more concentration, what you need to do is release yourself from your emotionality, because your emotions will cause you to feel from your DNA, let's say, a great deal of fear about your life and what's going to happen in your life or what could happen in your life. And the more you get involved in that kind of emotionality, the more you're going to find thoughts springing up from your genetics that are going to tell you, well, you ought to do this, you shouldn't do that. Your genetic acuity is going to come into play, and you're going to start thinking only from the thoughts that your genetics will allow you to think from. So my brain as a Greg can only think as far as Ed and Jean and my ancestry can offer. And believe me, it ain't much. It just isn't much. So if I want to, let's say, expand my mind and my mental acuity to something a little more, shall we say, intelligent, I'm going to have to go beyond my genetics. I'm going to have to transcend my genetics. So if you keep your attention and your focus away from, let's say, your emotionality, and there's a couple of ways, there's quite a few ways, I'm sure, to do this. The ones that I teach, here's a real simple one. Put a rock or a candle in front of you, something that is just plain Jane thing. Doesn't have to be special, doesn't have to have any meaning to you. In fact, the less meaning it has, the better. And just focus on that object until that object is the only thing in the room. It doesn't matter that it's there. It isn't about the color or the texture or the memory of it or whatever. You're just focusing, gazing upon that object. And that's all you're doing. You center your whole attention on that rock, just not analyzing it, thinking, well, look at that rock. You know, it's smooth here and da-da-da. No, 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 no. It's just an inanimate object. You're just observing it. Observing, not thinking it, observing what it is. And that's it. You don't try to make it better. You don't try to make it less. Watch how your mind is going to want to interpret this inanimate object and make it maybe more than what it is. And that is where your focus must go away from your emotionality. My emotions are going to want to make the object more or less than what it truly is. My emotions are going to say, well, that's a pretty rock, or that's not a pretty rock, or that's a rock I remember I got it here or there. No, 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 none of that. Just a rock. And you will find your emotions are going to get frustrated because it's an inanimate object. You're not trying to find value in it. Your mind may say, well, I don't think this exercise that Greg's offering is going to help me much because, and then blah, 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 all these excuses will come up. And that's your emotionality. That's your mind and your emotions ganging up on you saying, this isn't important. This isn't right. This isn't, you know, enough. This isn't this or that. All of that's going to come into play every single time. Don't let that bother you. Don't fall for that. Just sit there and let the rock be an inanimate object. And as it sits there, don't ask yourself why it sits there or any of that. Let it be the rock. Now, this is going to take practice. And Raymond, you're going to have to practice. And if that's too hard for you, if you can't focus on that just as a practice, there's nothing that can be done until you're absolutely convinced that you need to do this exercise or that this exercise in some way will be of benefit to you. You have to come to a place where you truly understand what it is that you're doing. As you do this more and more, one day or another, I know you won't believe me, but it's true, you will be able to focus on conversations that people are having with you. You'll be able to think more clearly, more deeply about any given subject that is presented to you. You won't find your mind straying away off into, well, what's in it for me or whatever. You will be present in everything that you do, every conversation that you have. The next thing that's going to happen is that you're going to be able to watch your breath more accurately. You will watch it go in. You will watch it go out. You will be able to watch that breath and not allow your mind to decrease your focus and concentration by having you stray off into some fantasy world. You will see everything for exactly what it is. And then in meditation, as you're watching your breath, and slowly, slowly disappearing, you will find you have insight about things you've never had before. Information will come to you that you did not ask for. It is provoked by silence, inwardness, as I like to call it. And you will have such beautiful insight about everything that is most important to you. That's how you do it. It isn't about controlling your mind. It is about transcending your thinking, how you think, the way you think, the quality of your thoughts, and coming to a place where this transcendence can actually show you the way, the light, and you can actually hear that which is just beyond your thinking ever so slightly. It will help you immensely if you do this, trust me. Raymond, you can do this if you focus, if you're the type of person that really wants it. So the trouble with most of us is We want it quick, fast, and easy. We don't have the focus, the discipline, the concentration, nor do we care to in order to achieve a little exercise like this. So it's up to you. You have to really seek it with all of your heart, your soul, and your strength. I hope that helps, Raymond. I do. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question from Angie. She did not tell me where she lives. What is the practice that will motivate me for discipline and meditation? Sweetheart, the practice has nothing to do with being motivated. Motivation is something that works up the emotions, and you think there's going to be some kind of payoff, something good is going to happen to you if you meditate. And it just doesn't really work like that. And that's not the reason we meditate. You don't meditate for benefits at all. And if you're looking for benefits, then you're not meditating and you will never be able to meditate. No, no, no. The practice that will bring you to meditation are a couple of things. The first one generally is futility. Until you see how futile your life can be and is, based on the premise that you have no inner core that is other than your emotionality, will be enough to motivate you to seek, shall we say, higher and more pronounced ways of living. Ways of living that are the essence of intelligence, the essence of the heart. This is truly one of the most important things you will ever learn in your life. Futility is the greatest teacher there is on the planet. It is the teacher for those who are of the pedestrian mentality, who just want to get by or are average and want to stay average or want more than average and think that they could do better and have more in their life. The people of more, the people of money, the people who believe in profit, these are the people who are mediocre. They're very clever. They're very smart. They are cunning, but they don't have the way in them, and they negate it. They betray it. So a great deal of our life and the many lifetimes we've had are spent in that kind of futility in our world. And the more we do it, the more futile our life becomes, the more you will be, shall we say, intrigued a little bit about how to use your mind differently. Then you will start to see the discipline that is necessary. And in that discipline, you will start to understand what focus and concentration is. And then you will start to release your emotions more because you won't let them cloud up your point of view, your perspective. You will no longer need to believe anymore. You will see things for the way they are, not the way you believe that they are happening. Your precepts, your concepts will all change. And all of a sudden, from out of nowhere and yet everywhere, you will see the beauty of life as love rushing to you to help you, to serve you, and you will find yourself intrigued by that. It's really that simple. A spiritual practice is nothing we use to motivate us to get what we want. An authentic spiritual practice is about awakening, inner awakening, beyond conceptual thoughts and beliefs that we might have, that moment of clarity, that moment of satori, where everything comes together in an instant and great beauty is realized. And sometimes this changes our entire life. Other times, well, it becomes our life. And for everyone, it's a little different. But definitely, life is never the same again. Believe me, it isn't. And it's worth everything you can do to let love live you. Thank you, Angie, for your beautiful question. I hope it helped. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste. I'm out of here. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. I hope you'll join me. Please forgive me, won't you? Please? Namaste.